There we go. Oh, in just a little bit, Tamira Rush working on the stories that matter. Sometimes it's hard news. Sometimes it's important news. Sometimes it's funny news. This is a story, and we've been playing it in the updates a little bit, but I need to expand on that. If we got put in jail for this, the jails would be full of people you didn't think were criminals. But you are. Uh-huh. You are. And she got to the bottom of it. We'll dive into that in just a little bit. I do want to talk to you on this blustery day. Your kids are probably home. You're probably going crazy. And rest assured, they'll be back at school tomorrow. So 866-391-1020. How about this study and this big AP story that's out there today? I saw Chris DeLuzio and a couple other elected officials have commented on it, and there's concern from elected people that say, hey, we got to do something here. So having a smartphone may be harmful for children younger than 12. Now, I didn't need a big study to know that, but let me dive into it a little more. Owning a smartphone, and I'm reading from this AP story, during early adolescence is associated with increased risks of mental health issues and obesity. As far as psychological impacts, it pinpointed higher incidence of depression and insufficient sleep among children who own smartphones by ages 12 or younger, compared with other kids without devices. Now, it analyzed data from more than 10,000 adolescents around the United States. According to all this research, 63.6, so let's say 64% of the study's participants owned a smartphone. And the median age they received them was 11. Younger children had greater risks than older participants of poor sleep, obesity, linked to smartphone ownership, with increasingly worse health outcomes reported for kids the younger they were when they got their phone. Now, the pediatric study also compared children who had obtained a smartphone at age 12 and children who had not, and found that 1 year later, those without smartphones were experiencing better mental health than those who had them. Now, they also said phones can play a constructive role in teens' lives by strengthening their social connection, helping them learn, adding to that some family members see it as a necessity for safety. Might get all that. Researchers intend to study younger children. I don't know why. And in recent years, a growing number of experts have sounded the alarm about increased screen time. Sure. Now, the questions are this. And 95% of teens between the ages of 13 and 17 owned a smartphone in 2024. 95% of teens between 13 and 17 had a smartphone. What's the right age at 866-391-1020? That's 866-391-1020. What's the right age? That's a very simple, straightforward question. Also, this is something where there's always these studies. Can you believe these numbers? Can you believe the screen time? Can you believe this? Can you believe that? Can you believe how kids can get in trouble? Well, how about this one? Try this one on. Can you believe how many idiot parents there are out there who don't monitor this? I'm not saying it would offset the dangers, the health risks, the way that it is, but there are parents who just aren't responsible, and it lends to this. Great text here from Dan. Call them handheld computers, not smartphones. Well, I'm sorry, Dan, that I read straight from the AP story. I'm going to continue to call them smartphones because that's what it cites. You can call them handheld computers, but they have a phone function. Thus, I'm going to call them smartphones. Back on task here. More than half the parents with children between 11 and 12 who were surveyed by the research center said that kids also owned cell phones between 11 and 12. 30% of parents with children between 8 and 10 said their kids owned smartphones. And this has to be a lie. 12% of parents with children that were between 5 and 7 said they had a cell phone. And 8% of parents with children younger than 5 said that child had a cell phone. I don't believe that one bit. The right age for me was, well, not for me, but for us to get for our kids, was 8th grade. And that was last year. Now our kids are in ninth grade. And it essentially just had a function where you could call. You couldn't surf the internet. You couldn't use social media or anything like that. Now, we have most likely become a society where it can't be reeled in. You can't go back on all of this. These numbers are going to remain where 95% of teens between 13 and 17 own a phone. That's not coming back. That's not diminishing. That's never going to be lower. It's about monitoring usage and making sure it's used in the right way. And that gets back to parents being parents, which seems relatively easy, but parents make it hard on themselves. And I ask a very simple question, because you'll get, well, how do I do that? Here's my simple question. Who pays that bill? And a lot of times, it's not the kid. So when we say it's kids' cell phones, is it really? Or is it your cell phone? See, for me, it's my cell phone. They just get to use it. And that's the way that it works. And at any time, that contract can be terminated. And that's the way that they know that it's going to be. Do you limit time usage? Do you monitor the usage? Do you check whenever they want to on social media, add another friend? It feels like there's a very simple answer to all of this, that we so often act like it's hard. But I think it's kind of simple in delivery, and it's get more involved. So many things are like that. Get more involved. If you find a way to get more involved, we can't make it to where it's no sum and it's zero and it is something that there are no dangers. But what we can do is knock that number down a great deal. And I think that's the way to go. 866-391-1020. What's the right age? That's the question I have for you. You have a teenager, you have a grandchild, you have somebody who's younger and you're thinking about getting them a phone. What's the right age? Hello to you. Tuesday, wonderful day. I don't think there's any more snow. This is that weird kind of purgatory time in life between Thanksgiving and Christmas. We don't know how to act, really. You have anticipation for Christmas, but you don't want it to get here too fast because then after it happens, it's sort of all downhill after that. You're into the new year and you're like, blah, it's still cold out. We just celebrated, but it was just Christmas and then, you know, nothing's on the other side of it but cold weather until like St. Patrick's Day. No more holidays, New Year, that's fun, I guess. But you're like, you kind of, and there's people in and out of work. They got a bunch of days off. They got to knock them out before they lose them at the end of the year. It's just a weird time, like a no man's land on the calendar. So we're there. 866-391-1020 is that number. Oh, on top of that, too, you get these like 2-hour delay, no morning kindergarten, or full on closed for the day. And that's what happened with a lot of people today. So there's that. All right, Tamara Rush, she finds the stories. She does. We have a great newsroom. I do need to mention that. Paul Rasmussen, Paul Alexander, Ballerato, Andy Lindberg sort of stirs it all. Pat Septak, Tamara Rush. All that stuff you hear that gets on the air in terms of news content, you know, that you hear in the updates or that I play a bunch of clips from, that doesn't magically appear. Like, nobody hands it to people. They got to make calls. They got to get in touch with people. And first, they need to flesh out stories. I mean, they have meetings. Hey, what's the stories today? Sometimes they're obvious. There'll be a tragedy or there'll be something celebrated, and that's obvious. Other times, you kind of got to figure it out. And I think our staff is brilliant at figuring it out and delivering you the quirky or the ones that you might not hear in other places or see in other media outlets. This is one of them. It's just this. Did you know that, and you may have, but is this one of those laws you're willing to break? Scratch off tickets. A woman by the name Diana Dietz from the Pennsylvania Lottery, she was talked to by our own Tamara Rush, and said this.
You know, it may seem harmless, but it can actually increase the risk of developing gambling-related harms later in life. So again, these national studies show that many adults who experience gambling-related harms later in life say, you know, they first encounter gambling when they were adolescents.
Okay, a little bit more from her.
It's messaging that we focus on year-round, but particularly in the holiday season, it's important to help spread that message across the state. And again, it's, you know, throughout the holiday season, we're reinforcing that responsible play in our advertising.
Do you know what that responsible play is? Don't give kids scratch-offs in their stockings. If they enforce that or found a way to, there'd be a lot of people in jail or up for fines. So I ask you this at 866-391-1020. Do you have that father-in-law? Do you have that aunt? Do you have that mom who insists on giving your kids scratch-offs? Like, I'll say this. I'm a lawbreaker. Not giving them as much as getting them. There's something magical as a kid. And that's a great interview. Tamara got in touch with somebody. But I'm not telling you to break the law. I'm just going to tell you the enticement of why it's so much fun. You get that coin, that penny, that nickel. Well, they don't make pennies anymore, so you better find one now. That nickel, that dime, that quarter. And you sit down at the table and you try to read the rules. You're like 10 years old, maybe even 8, maybe younger. And you're like, okay, so if I get a 7, or what's in that box? Oh, a 12. I got to get a 12. Okay. Or if I get 3 of them, okay, I can win $5,000. You start scratching. And the magic of that metallic covering coming off of those numbers and getting into these little like shards all over your table or your kitchen island or wherever you're scratching them off. And you're like, this is the remnants. This is the real stuff. This is gambling. All right, what did I need to get again? A 7. Wait, I got one. Oh, I got to get 2. I got to get 2. Or a treasure chest. If I get a treasure chest and a 7, I get whatever the prize is. Though prize is only $2, I'm probably going to win. If the prize was like $5,000, no way in hell I'm going to win. Hold on, I got to scratch some more. Wait, it's an 8? A 7? Oh, it's another 7. No, it's a 17. I got screwed. This sucks. And then scratch it all the way off. Then you got like some semi-drunk uncle who does it with a knife. And you look at him like he's like the baddest biker ever. And he's not even a biker. He just uses a knife to do it. And you're like, look at this guy. The magic of the holiday season when you're a kid and you get a scratch-off ticket. All respect to the lady from the Pennsylvania lottery that Tamara talked to. Illegal, this, that, I get it. There is a jolt that goes through you as a kid when you get a scratch off that you're going to be in the money and you're doing something, well, illegal. And that's half the fun of it, and you know it. So enter at your own risk, I guess. And you heard what the fine lady said, but I'm not going to tell you how to run your life. News bottom of the hour, KDK. Rich Fitzgerald's on a lot. Good for him. He tells you a lot. I bet he gets into the airport some, so there'll be that. And the snow removal. I'm glad I talked to him yesterday about the snow removal. That was fantastic. Listen for The Drive at 5. Stories driving the news every single day at 5. It's all brought to you by ServiceMaster Greater Pittsburgh. Demand that yellow van. So, speaking of snow removal, I want to dive into that just because, you know, it's timely right now. Top of the hour. Have you received, I guess that's the best way to put it. Have you received a parking ticket from the city of Pittsburgh as of late? It may be a money grab. Really, it may be a money grab. I've tried to dissect this. I've looked at it up and down. I've tried to give them kind of the benefit of the doubt. I've even wanted to, but I've arrived at a place where it truly may be a money grab. I'll explain at the top of the hour. So there's that. a seldom used. Let's talk removing snow. So buying a snowblower is, I don't think you get your return on investment. Maybe a battery one if you need to get one. The whole gas snowblower, too expensive for the amount of times that it truly snows and you need it. I mean, honestly, just no. I don't believe that you need a gas snowblower in Western Pennsylvania. Maybe a battery one if you so feel moved to go buy one. Cheap one, keep it under $300. You do you. I'm just saying. I don't have one. What I do have is free labor, though. A 14-year-old son who's very ready to go shovel. A 14-year-old daughter who can be coaxed into it by being told, well, go do it. And maybe a prize or something here and there. Anyway, my son looked at me like I was a goof today. But sometimes old people know what's going on. And I'm getting there. Because I learned this from old Italian guys in Sharpsburg. A little used or underused tool in snow removal is the long, wide push broom. Now, you gotta have the right sort of situation. And we did eventually today. If you get that long, wide, like warehouse push broom, you know which one I'm talking about, okay? And you can use it under two circumstances. One, you get a light dusting. I'm talking an inch or less. And the snow isn't super heavy. There's no reason to get the shovel out. The push broom is fantastic. It covers a wide area. And it pushes it out and it saves on your back. You don't have to bend over. It's wonderful. Where the push broom comes into play today is this. If you shovel, and it's where it came in today. My son looked at me like I had two heads. I go, I'm going to go get the broom. And he go, huh? I go, what? Just watch. Just watch. So we shoveled it all up, or as much as we could. Okay? What it left was that light dusting on the driveway and on the sidewalk. There was just, pardon me, a little bit going on. So what? There's no way you're going to be able to get that up with a shovel. It's just kind of affixed to the cement, and you don't want to throw the salt yet because it'll create these kind of like mushy sort of pasty piles all around if you throw that salt right on the snow that's left. If you get to that snow in a decent amount of time where it doesn't sit there overnight or anything, the wide push broom is such a underutilized tool in all snows that I don't understand why people don't use it more. So what you do is you just go side to side or front to back, wherever you can get the widest and biggest area, and you start to push and you go. And damn if you can't see that cement. I mean, it is a fantastic thing. But here's another key. You need to be ready to score a big parlay. As soon as you get done with that push broom, and you have to watch because the bristles will start to freeze unto themselves. As soon as you get done pushing and you get that snow up, salt needs to go on right away. If you can do that, some of that salt may even offset a little bit of more falling snow, additional falling snow later on. The push broom is not in enough people's arsenal. I learned that from some old guys. And anytime there's an old guy doing something, especially somebody a generation like beyond me, you pay attention. Because they knew how to work with implements. They knew how to work with their hands. They didn't have smartphones or computers or the internet. They just knew how to do stuff. And part of what they knew how to do was getting snow up off the ground, right? So today was fantastic. Like I said, my son, he's 14. He was looking at me. He goes, why do you need a broom? I go, oh, just watch. And I think I did a pretty admirable job, but it was definitely passed down. I'll tell you a man who has certainly used a push broom on snow, Jack in Mount Lebanon. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Colin. How's the family?
Wonderful. Had a great day. Am I right about this push broom?
Yeah. I remember my dad had called me up and said, get over here and shovel.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it'd still be snowing.
Uh-huh.
And you had to do it. It was your dad.
Correct.
And I'd do that, and it'd say, why don't you, and he'd be the boss. Why don't you do it this way? Why don't you get the broom? Why don't you do this? I said, Dad, I'm doing it. Don't worry about it. It'll get done. It was fun.
Oh.
I'm days like that.
Certainly. Now, did you think you had the way to do it, or did you listen to him?
Well, I sort of listened to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Feel good.
See,
and you have to.
Right. Know? My son thinks you can just get it all with a shovel. I don't think that's the case. I think you have to infuse the broom.
Yeah, you do. In some places, yes.
He had, you know what he had out today? The leaf blower.
That's good. He's smart.
You work harder, not smarter, or work smarter, not harder, I should say. All that kind of stuff. I saw that and was kind of, I'll tell you what, he may have turned me on to something new, Jack. He had the leaf blower going.
But the leaf blower is better when the snow's lighter.
Yeah, it was too heavy today.
Yeah.
It's got to be that, like, sandy snow, the light sandy snow.
Yeah, like if a wind comes by, it'll blow it off the sidewalk.
You got to have that kind of snow to use that leaf blower. Absolutely, positively. I think he was down the right road, but in the wrong neighborhood. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unless it's like a torch and blow heat and melt it.
Did you ever use a blowtorch or a flamethrower on snow?
No. Uh-uh.
Would you ever think about doing it?
No, because it's going to freeze.
Good call. 866-391-1020. 866-391-1020. Top of the hour. I think you might be getting bamboozled by the city of Pittsburgh. I mean that. That's not a joke at all. I'll explain. Let's hit traffic now. Here we are. 866-391-1020. 866-391-1020. So much happening. You know, there's also serious news like this.
I hear they ripped off Somalians, ripped off that state for billions of dollars, billions, every year, billions of dollars, and they contribute nothing.
You know what's a serious topic and something to think about? So President Trump, during a lengthy cabinet meeting today, said he didn't want Somali immigrants in the United States, saying residents of that Eastern African country, they're too reliant on U.S. social safety nets and add little to the United States. Those are his words, not mine. And his comments came days after the administration announced they're halting all asylum decisions following the shooting of those two National Guard soldiers in D.C. Now, the suspect in last week's shooting is Afghani, but Trump has used this time to raise questions about all immigrants from other nations, especially places like Somalia. And he says Somali immigrants are misusing funds in Minnesota. Okay? And he's blaming Tim Walz, naturally. One thing, and I agree with a pause and a referendum and a look. One of the primary questions, and I know that America fashions itself as a melting pot, and I know people look at our world as you have a safe haven, you can make a better life in America, and all of that. And people will point to, well, what about the Irish when they come here? What are you? Where'd you come from? It was a much different time. Okay? One fundamental question that I ask myself is, and this is during the pause and to think about this for a moment, should we be so reticent to take people into our country from countries we would never go to? Who's the last person you know that said, you know what, I'm going to book a trip to Somalia? Seriously. Should we be so reticent to take people in to our country from countries that no one in our country would ever think of visiting? I'm not saying that needs to stop forever, but I'm saying a pause, a deep breath, and a long look on evaluation of that, a plus-minus ratio, a beneficial sort of glance at all of it, should happen. Plenty of Americans visit England. Plenty of Americans visit Ireland. Plenty of Americans visit Germany. Plenty of Americans visit Brazil. Plenty of Americans visit a lot of other places. Plenty of Americans visit Mexico. And Mexicans can sure as heck come here legally. But should we be very anxious or ready or willing even, just right now, to take people in from a country that we would never go to? I'm not saying that can't happen in the future, but I think there needs to be a long look at why we would never go there. And part of the reasons we would never go there are the poverty, the crime, the lack of government, the way in which quarrels are dealt with so violently. And can people be changed, or do they carry that here whenever you grant them asylum? And it just a total referendum on who we're letting in. And the people who try to equate it to the potato famine and Irish people coming here are just so lost in their argument. How much of a different time it was, how much immigration was totally different, and the willingness, the want, and the hope that those immigrants had that were much different than some people coming to our country now. Anyway, 866-391-1020. That's 866-391-1020. Are you getting bamboozled by the city of Pittsburgh? If you got a parking ticket, you very well may be. I'll explain in a little bit. News top of the hour, KDK.